Yeah.
We have a no clapping policy, but I'm clapping anyway.
Yeah, you can clap for that. That's okay.
Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 176, and as always, your hosts Matt, Scott, and Ash are all here, and today's a special one.
Pretty excited. So we have Freddie Prinze Jr. on the show, and...
What?
I know. What the heck happened? How was that? How cool. We actually have to... Jen Jarvis set this up in a strange way. I put an all-call out on Twitter a few weeks back, and I asked the community, you know, who would they like to see on the show? She's like, hey, you should try and get Freddie Prinze Jr. on the show. And he was listening, and he came on. And it was awesome. Like, what a super cool guy.
The power of social media.
Seriously, right? As soon as we were done with this one, we all kind of sat around. We're like, we just want to, like, hang out with him. Like, he's such a nice dude. And, like, Scott was like, he was, like, hanging out with just, like, one of us.
Like, you could literally see him as another host on this podcast or somebody that we would play Destiny with or whatever. He's such a great guy.
Absolutely.
Down to earth and really awesome dude with really great stuff to say too, so we're excited to bring it to you.
Yes,
absolutely.
Let's do the rundown.
So on today's podcast, obviously we're talking to Freddie Prinze Jr. What else do you want?
That's it.
That's all it's gonna be. Yeah,
that's all you guys are gonna get.
Take that.
No, it was awesome. The interview went long, so we're going to show you pretty much or let you listen to pretty much the entire thing. So that is this week's episode.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And it's brought to you by Loot Crate. Loot Crate is a monthly subscription service where for a small fee, they'll deliver a box full of awesome stuff to your house. As I bragged about one episode ago, I don't remember now, the Halloween one was incredible. It had a bunch of awesome stuff in it. The shirt was awesome. The exclusive
Dead Rising stuff, yeah.
Dead Rising toy pen was amazing. I didn't want to like break that to anybody. It was so amazing. But it was really awesome stuff. But this month... you can sign up for November, and November is head-to-head, rough-and-tumble battle for your senses. They're celebrating the fighting heroes, battling rogues, 8-bit brawlers, and other factions that we love from some of your favorite geek and gaming titles things, including exclusive Mega Man and Assassin's Creed collectibles, Halo, Street Fighter, and more surprises. They've got another exclusive t-shirt with a design that you won't find anywhere else, and you don't want to miss it. So if you can go to lootcrate.com/ratedNA right now, that's lootcrate.com/ratedNA, and you get 10% off by entering the code RatedNA, and in the process, you help out the podcast. We get to keep bringing you great interviews like Freddie Prinze Jr., and you get awesome stuff every month. So please go sign up for Loot Crate, help us out, and get some awesome stuff in your mailbox.
Mm-hmm. And big thanks to Loot Crate for being good buddies.
Indeed.
We should tell some new listeners just a brief little bit about us before we dive into our chat with Freddie Prinze Jr. We're just now celebrating our 4-year anniversary, so congrats to you guys.
Hooray.
Oh yeah, this is kind of our 4-year anniversary
this
episode.
Is it. Yeah, this is it. And it's awesome that Freddie Prinze Jr. showed up for us. So 4-year anniversary, we've been doing the show, you know, almost every single week since then. So you know, little breaks here and there for holidays and things like that. But, you know, a lot of people have helped us out along the way. Our music, our theme song is by Jimmy Henson, Big Giant Circles, who was one of the composers on Mass Effect 2. And he was nice enough to compose an amazing theme song for us. So big thanks to him for that. And for those of you who don't listen to us on a regular basis, we cover conventions all over the U.S. We go to places like San Diego Comic-Con and PAX East and PAX Prime and even Star Wars Celebration a long time ago we did. And we love doing it. And, you know, definitely take some time to subscribe to us. We'd love to have you stick around. And let's go ahead and dive right into our talk with Freddie Prinze Jr. What do you guys think?
Fantastic.
I think that sounds good.
Enjoy.
Hey, everybody. Guess who's here? It's Freddie Prinze Jr. Welcome, Freddie Prinze Jr.
How's it going, fellas?
Good.
How you doing?
Thanks. Good, man. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on. This is an awesome treat for us and an awesome treat for our listeners. And we have a million questions for you, and we're just going to kind of hang out and see how it goes. So how you doing, man? How have things been going?
Pretty good, man. I live a pretty simple, chilled, laid-back lifestyle. I get a, you know, with Star Wars, it affords me the ability to kind of be a stay-at-home dad and not have to travel all over the world. Like a lot of other actors have to sacrifice. I'm fortunate enough that I don't have to, and I don't have ambitions to continue to do so.
Yeah.
So my life is what it was when I was younger, man, which was, you know, martial arts and family and video games and you know, science fiction books and whatever other you sort of hobbies turn lifestyle, I guess, so to speak. And yeah, I have a lot more time to do those things now.
That's awesome. That actually sounds like a pretty awesome life, to be honest. It's kind of like what we're all aspiring to do ourselves. Let's kind of jump back to the beginning with like little Freddie Prinze Jr. And whenever I have people on, I kind of like dig. I become like a creep in research. And it's so intimidating to have you on, because I was going through a lot of your old interviews, and like everyone has interviewed you. Like you were on Howard Stern, like interviewed by Fallon a bunch of times. I'm like, holy cow, like there's probably been like no questions you haven't been asked, but there haven't been a lot about when you were a kid and when you were a kid growing up playing video games. So what was your experience like as a kid, and when did you kind of get your first consoles and or your first, you know, PCs, and what was that like?
That's funny. And in 20 years, that's probably the best question possible to figure out what kind of kid I was. And like you said, man, I've been interviewed by a lot of people. It's funny that it took a gamer to finally figure out the right question to ask.
Awesome.
You know, I was an only child, and I didn't have a father, obviously, although I had a few father figures. But they didn't live with us, or if they did, it wasn't ever full time, or if I lived with them, it wasn't full time. So, and I didn't have a lot of friends. So when video games were sort of invented and Atari came out, it was a huge relief, I think, to introverts everywhere, to only children everywhere. And as they evolved quickly, like they still do, when the NES system came out, those games, you wanted to be Mega Man. You wanted to be Strider. When you died, and they made sure you died. There was no God mode back then. Oh, like yeah. You died plenty. You had to adapt and evolve and play the way that you were designed to play the game. It wasn't just, here's a bazillion bullets. Have fun. Mm-hmm. Except with Contra. But even then, it was only 20 guys. 20 lives, something like that. And Ikari Warriors was another one where you could,
oh, I remember Ikari Warriors. Hell yeah.
Stage all the way to the end. And then if you died, that was your ass. But at least you could get to the end with your three guys. But anyway, I'm getting sidetracked. So a game came out called Golgo 13 The Professional. And it was a fairly unknown title. But the guy was basically the Japanese James Bond. Mm-hmm. And I fell in love with that character. I couldn't read the friggin' comic books because they were all in Japanese, and so I could only look at the pictures. And it wasn't until I was in my like mid-20s I realized I was reading them backwards. But I didn't know. You know, as a kid, I just liked the animation and thought Duke Togo looked cool. And then I lived by this arcade that had a Beta VHS store. They were doing the conversion from Beta tapes to VHS tapes back then.
Oh, wow.
Two movies I ever rented were a VHS copy of Golgo 13, The Professional, and a beta copy of RoboCop, which I
know. Oh, hell yeah.
Wow.
Wow, this is the greatest movie ever. But I played Golgo, and it had scenes with women, like with beautiful women in it. And I was still young when this game came out. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a game. It would be like, you know, an 8-year-old playing Grand Theft Auto today, which I'm sure almost every 8-year-old does. But I had this game, and I literally was like, wow, like that's the ladies' man, like that's the guy. So I knew I wanted to be like a badass guy. Excuse my language.
No,
that's
no.
Why I wanted.
You
to
can
be
swear as swear all you want on the show. So.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, cool. So my mom hooked me up with my godfather, who taught my dad how to fight. It's this guy named Bob Wall. Everybody should Google him because he trained Bruce Lee when Bruce came to America.
Wow,
he's pretty much the man. And that was the guy who introduced me to martial arts, and kind of steered my life in a more Eastern philosophy direction than both my grandmothers, who were, you know, big believers in Western religion. But any time I got with my godfather was, you know, my favorite time, because as a boy I got to fight.
Yeah.
So everything he told me I believed to be true. You know, he told me team sports suck. But when you lose, you pointed at everyone else instead of pointing at yourself. And so he encouraged individual sports, mainly martial arts, but individual sports. He said, you know, you can only blame yourself when you lose. So that was a very big part of my life. And in video games, that philosophy sort of rang true. Like, you could get mad at the controller. You could get mad at the board and say, oh, it's a glitch. But at the end of the day, you know, it's just you that sucked and you have to get better. That game was so friggin' hard for me anyway. I'm sure there were some Korean kids out there that were killing it. But and when I finally beat that game, that sense of accomplishment was literally, you know, equal to winning a track meet or my first amateur boxing fight or, you know, my first real fight. It felt that good. It was as good as a first kiss. Because I earned that, you know what I mean? Like, you got to earn a first kiss. There's girls that say no. There's girls that turn their cheek right before you get there, and that doesn't count. Like, there's so many variables to getting that first kiss that when you get it, it's like I haven't taken cocaine, but they say, you know, once you take cocaine, you chase that first high for the rest of your life. Like, that's what video games were. It's like that feeling you get when you beat your first game, and there was no help, there was no cheats, there was no anything. It's just you accomplished that really kind
of, especially a lot of those titles,
get me out of my shell.
A lot of those titles you mentioned at the beginning, like Mega Man, Strider, like those were hard ass games. Those games were no joke. And I remember you and I are about the same age. I remember being a kid and having Mega Man in front of me and just grinding my teeth trying to get through those difficult stages, especially near the end. And
that was one of the hardest games I ever played.
Oh, absolutely. And near the end, when you finally do beat Mega Man, it is so rewarding and so, like, crazy. You know, you do get that crazy high. So I totally get what you're saying.
You had to make
like
notes
Mike
on
Tyson's
paper
punch
back
out, right? Like Tyson's Vader. Like, they make you wait so long before you finally get to kill Vader, or in this case, Mike Tyson.
I never did. I still never have. It's one of that game I've never – I think I got to – who was Sandman? No, I got past maybe Sandman.
Oh, you beat Sandman. There's that guy that looks like super buff, Mr. Wonderful looking guy. He's before Tyson. People had a hard time with
him. That's who I couldn't get past. But yeah, that game's still incredibly hard. I still kind of, that's on my bucket list of games to beat before I get out of here.
Yeah, you got it. You
got to go. I got to beat Tyson. Well, that's awesome.
I just sounded like the little Indian dude from 40-Year-Old Virgin. You got to get on that.
So you grew up playing a bunch of games, and that was sort of, you know, you sound like you were a lot like us. You had a console in front of you, and you were, you know, doing your best to get through them. What were some of your favorites when you were a little kid growing up?
You know, my cousin gave me Metroid when he was done with it, and I fell in love with that game. And that was like the first game that sort of – that and Golgo – they sort of got me out of my shell as a kid, because all of a sudden you could talk to other kids that had done what you'd done. And then there would be kids on the school bus that hadn't beat that stage. And all of a sudden you were cool. And they're like, how did you beat that? How did you do that? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you didn't want to tell anyone that Samus was a girl, or Samus, however they say. I always said Samus.
Yeah, I did.
But you didn't want to tell them because it was like a secret. But if you did tell them, you felt like, you know, it was like wrecking Harry Potter for somebody. There were kids that got off on that, right? Mm-hmm. I remember playing this game. It wasn't great, but it was a good filler. It was called Guild Wars. And I was playing this, like, priest character, and my best spell I could, like, life swap with you right before you killed me in PvP. And then you'd have no life, and my buddy would just, like, tap you once and you'd die. It was our favorite thing to do. some jerk came in and literally, like, blew the end of one of the Harry Potter books.
Oh, no.
Like, right when it came out. And I literally, for like 45 minutes, followed this guy's character around and just made his life a living hell. Logged on later. I was just, you just saw all, and I didn't care. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But you saw so many people's response. And I won't even say it in case there's kids out there that haven't read it or seen the movie yet. But it was someone killed someone, and it was a big deal. And people were just wrecked about it online, and I was like, nah, I'm going to just ruin this guy's gaming experience for the next hour. So.
Yeah, I remember videos of people driving past bookstores yelling what you just said out the window, like so-and-so killed so-and-so, and just like the people in line like screaming and chasing the car. And
you know what I'm saying? Could you imagine if one of those guys was a little crazy and had a gun? Like, oh, I know. You can't be killing that, man.
No, you can't do that in today's day and age. Absolutely not. Well, that's awesome. So do you have a chance to play much stuff now? Are you playing anything right now?
Yeah, man. I'll game till my fingers don't work anymore.
Awesome.
I play Destiny a bit. You know, once you get to a certain level, it becomes a bit of a loot grind, and that's not my type of game. Yeah. You know, Borderlands is fine, but it's just, for me, it's not a 10. I know a lot of people have it at a 9 and 10, but... Mm-hmm. Loot grind games aren't that to me. So, but I do play a little bit. You know, I got friends online that are like, hey, let's do this raid, and I'll go in and we'll do some crazy stuff. But to be honest, man, I still play Grand Theft Auto 5.
It's so good. It's so good.
Style, and when it comes out on Xbox One, it'll be downloaded right away. And that's just those have always been my games, man. I played Red Dead Redemption until GTA 5 came out.
Wow, that's a great game.
Yeah.
I love Redemption.
Not the zombie mode. I hate zombies. That's the one thing. I don't play zombie games or horror games or anything like that. I played the first Resident Evil, and it effed me up so much. It's so shady how they do you. Like, you're walking down this hall in, like, a library or a school. I can't even remember. This game came out a long time ago.
Yeah.
And all the windows are boarded up on the left wall, right? And the walls on the boarded windows are on your left.
I remember this scene. I remember the scene pretty well.
Yeah, and there's like a desk that's been drug out of a room, and it's blocking the right wall. So you have to go left up against the boarded windows. Screw that game. Screw whoever came up with that scene. Screw. I'd never dropped a controller in fear before. And it wasn't even me that dropped it so much as it literally leapt from my hands in fear. And I've never played a horror game since. Like, I refuse. My buddy's an a-hole and sent me that game Fear on the PC.
Oh, man.
That would be funny. It was for him, but it's his $50.
But yeah, that scene in Resident Evil is an absolute classic. I had the exact same reaction walking down that hallway, and I still think to this day that's the game that scared me the most. You know, I was like, I think like, I don't
for
know,
sure.
13, 14, something like that when that game came out. I remember sitting around with my buddies all night playing that game and just like being scared absolutely shitless. So
man, they did it. Man, I can't even do it. Like, I still won't play them to this day. I didn't even do the Red Dead Nightmare, like extra, whatever they call it, DLC. Like, there wasn't even a chance I would do that. No way.
I'm totally with you. I've told the story before on the podcast, and I'll keep it brief, but the night before I got married, I had picked up Dead Space for unknown reasons. And I put the game in.
My buddy's a huge Dead Space fan. Oh. He literally says, oh, yeah, you'd hate it, Freddy.
You would hate it. I played for 10 minutes. And it's like I'm going into, like, you know, one of the more stressful days of my life. And I picked up Dead Space. I start playing. Like, 10 minutes into it, like, a guy moves behind you. And when you turn around, there's no guy there. And I literally just stood up and unplugged the Xbox and, like, walked away. I was like, done. Wiping my hands clean. Not doing this anymore.
It's so weird, man. Like, horror movies don't scare me at all, right? Yeah, like, once you've been in one, you're like, yeah, it's not scary. Like, once I worked at WWE, it was like, yeah, I can't watch a match for 6 months after I quit. Like, you know, you don't want to know how the trick's done, or the magician's kind of a dork and he's not cool anymore. You know what I mean? So maybe if I worked on a horror game or something like that, I would have a different experience, but screw that. I wouldn't even audition for a horror video.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Let's talk about your work in video games, because obviously we're huge BioWare fans and huge fans of your work. So how did you end up getting involved at BioWare? I mean, how did you end up getting the character of Vega?
No, honestly, I don't even specifically know how. It came to me through my manager as just a random offer. They were like, hey, you like video games, right? I said, yeah. They said, have you ever heard of some game called Mass Effect? And when the first one came out, I mean, that became quickly one of my, like, top 10 games ever. I think Mass Effect 2 happens to be a top 5 game ever.
Yeah.
But I was like, yeah. He said, well, they're making another one. Would you want to be in it? And I was like, oh my God, yeah. It doesn't pay much. I was like, I don't care. Just let me get in the game. And I the first person I texted was Seth Green. I was like, dude, I'm going to be in Mass Effect.
Oh, that's so exciting.
So I went in and I met with the director, Caroline Livingston, and we kind of spoke about what kind of guy he was. And then this really cool guy named Mac came on. I don't remember Mac's last name.
I think Walters might be his last name, Mac Walters.
It may be. Yeah. He came on and he gave me this, like, just phenomenal sort of journey that this young, idealistic soldier was going to go on. And this conversation was about, you know, a little bit over an hour with Mac and with Caroline, just a little under an hour. And we sort of talked about how we wanted him to sound and what kind of slang he wanted to throw in there. As you know, in the Mass Effect games, there's a lot of casual banter and mm-hmm. a lot of that is just freestyled. It's not all written. And so if you have ideas that they like, they put them in the game. So we kind of discussed what those things would be. And then we just got into it and you literally just record it sort of storyline by storyline or segment within each said storyline. And they record Shepard first, which is the best way to do it, so that the supporting characters are reacting to the lead character, or in other games, that's not always the case. Mm-hmm. But it's a very good way to do it. And you have to remember, he's doing three different performances based on the choices you make, so we're responding three different ways. And there were a couple things that I really missed. You know, I remember sitting in the booth and saying, hey, man, what about my loyalty mission? When are we getting into that? And it was just crickets on the other end. It was like, I was like, oh no, I just said it like Voldemort or something, right? They were like, yeah
absolutely.
So, you know, there were certain things in there that I missed, but I really loved the character and I loved getting to see those relationships sort of unfold with Femme Shep, who's Jennifer Hale, who I got to meet her at one of the recording sessions and like genuinely kind of fell for her. Like, she's just that kind of a you can't help it, man. Like,
she's an awesome human being.
We had her on the show, I think right before 3 came out, and she's like one of those insanely inspirational people. She like actually kind of inspired me. Yeah, she is. She inspired me to kind of live a little bit differently. She's like, you need to be healthier and like, you know, take care of yourself. And just was so, it was like, if you go back and listen to the episode, it's like a motivational speech. I'm just like, oh my God.
Yeah, I met her father and her and I were speaking about jujitsu for her kid and yoga for mine. That was all we talked about, was healthy living.
Yeah, absolutely.
but getting to see those relationships sort of unfold and through the DLC, some of the fan wish fulfillment that happened, I had a lot of fun with. So the way they kind of tied up that Krogan storyline, I thought was just incredible. One of my favorite moments from all three games.
Oh, the scene with Morden. Yeah, that scene.
Yeah, man.
That was really heavy. That was really great. Mm-hmm. You were mentioning Mass 2 being one of your like top five, and I'm absolutely there with you. That's the title that really dragged me in to. I mean, I love BioWare prior to Mass 2, but Mass 2. Oh my gosh, I could talk about that game. We honestly, the first like 20 podcasts that we did, we were just like us talking about Mass Effect 2.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, that's the effect that BioWare's had culturally. I mean, it's changing the way video games in general are beginning to change the way Hollywood's making movies and television again. And we're getting away from the God mode characters and we're allowing our characters to suffer a little more. You know what I mean? Like, Jack Bauer was one of the greatest characters on TV, but he always won. He barely even got beat up. Like, Luke Skywalker got his hand cut off. And by the way, they did that to someone in 24 too. got his hand cut off and had to and come back and win. But they make you wait three movies. They make you wait years to see that. And I think Hollywood has gotten very impatient, and mistakenly so. They think that audiences are more impatient, so we need to be more impatient. That's not true. You just have more corporations being involved in a lot of creative decisions when maybe they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And it's not the way movies used to get made, and it's not the way TV used to get made. We didn't make 40 pilots and pick up six. We made none.
Yeah.
What I mean? Like,
that's a really good point.
The networks and studios didn't dictate to literary agents, here's the types of shows we're looking for. The creative people, the writers and producers said, here's the types of shows you're looking for, and like did the Jedi mind trick. But those shows were awesome. You know what I mean? And, yeah, and yeah. Now our business literally is run by them. And there's some writers out there that I promise, you know, fans who hate TV these days, it's not the writer's fault. They have some awesome scripts that you guys would love. It's just The studios won't buy them because they want something to be just like that show that was a hit last year. Video games, I think, are starting to spin that in a different direction because they're seeing, and they have to see it to believe it, a more patient audience. They're seeing, you know, a game that gives you 6 hours of gameplay, and at the end of it, it's not complete. You have to wait for the sequel. Mm-hmm. And you get character completion, right? You get satisfaction, but the story's not complete. Like in Mass 2, you knew it was going to go down in Mass 3. Mm-hmm. In Mass 1, you knew it was going to go down in Mass 2. It was just a matter of when are they giving me the game.
Yep.
So I hope this trend continues. It seems to be skewing this way, especially with Marvel taking a hold of this business the way it has.
Yeah.
And needing to tell a longer story, and these movies making a bazillion dollars. So, you know, hopefully studios and television studios and networks will start to say, oh, yeah, maybe audiences aren't so stupid. Maybe we should tell a story and have dialogue in a third act. Whoa! Yeah. It's been 10 years. But it can be. We can do it if we pull together.
Right.
Someone can say something before the credits roll.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think games are pushing it that way. I think if they ever do make a Mass Effect movie, it'll have the potential to be that sort of epic trilogy sci-fi thing that people, you know, get so hungry for that, you know, they'll eat anything once. And I think that'll sort of raise the bar, but I don't know if they're close to doing something like that.
Yeah. Who knows? Everything you said, I completely agree with, and I'm not just saying that. I mean, I was just kind of listening to you, like nodding my head slowly over here in the background, but absolutely. I think, you know, patience pays off. And I think, what you said about what they're doing with the Marvel movies is, I think, absolutely right. You know, they're kind of taking their time. They have a plan. It seems like they're laying everything out. And I think games, hopefully, are going to continue down that path. So we actually get, like you said, a third act and an actual arc to a lot of these stories. So I think that's really cool. But back to Mass 2 real quick. I know our listeners would absolutely kill me if I didn't ask you who your favorite romance option was for Mass 2 and 3.
For Mass 2, it was easy. I don't watch trailers for movies. So I don't watch gameplay for games unless it's a multiplayer type experience. I don't ever want to see storyline. I don't want to see anything. Like I said, once I worked for WWE, I couldn't watch a match again for 6 months. Like, it's just there's something that it irks me, right? So I didn't know who Jack was in Mass 2.
Mm-hmm.
I just knew I was going to get Jack, and this character was going to help me out. And as soon as I saw her and her shaved head and knew how tortured and troubled she was and knew how evil/great she would be, that was it. Like Miranda, I was like, I don't even care about getting my Paragon up enough to make them both be okay when you have to make that decision.
Oh, that seems great.
Whereas if your Paragon isn't like, it may even have to be full, but if it's full, you can get both chicks to calm down. So whichever one you don't pick doesn't hate you, but I didn't even care. I was like, she can hate me, whatever. That was the easiest decision ever. That's only because Liara wasn't an option.
Yeah.
So As soon as that became the option, then that was in Mass 3. That was the road that I went down. Mm-hmm. And I know the actress that voiced her, Allie.
You know, Allie Hillis, she's awesome.
Yeah, we almost did a pilot together. I did the pilot for Paul Reiser, and she was up for one of the girls. She didn't get the role, but she was great in the audition. And literally in the audition, I didn't know that it was her, and she said just one line that kind of sounded like Liara, and I stopped in the middle of the audition. I was like, oh my God, you're Liara. And her whole face was red. Totally blushed. And I was like, look, awesome. When this is over, we got to go outside and you got to give me some of that voice.
I know. Just a little bit of how the sauce gets made. She was one of the first people that we had on the show as one of these interviews, like the ones we're doing now. And she was so super sweet to me. And she kind of gave me the confidence to do these. She said some really sweet stuff after the interview was over. And I was like, okay, like I can do this. I can get on with people. Because sometimes, you know, doing these interviews, it's scary and kind of hard. But she was like, you know, it was awesome. It was fun. You need to do these all the time. So, you know, we hold her in really high regard here. So she's like one of our favorite folks. So that's cool that you know her and you have experience with her too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she's obviously our a lot of our romance options too.
Yeah, for sure.
She was very patient and understanding with me because every time I see her, I beg her to do the voice.
I know. she did the voice on the show, and it was so like it was one of the few times on the show where I completely blushed and like couldn't talk.
Because you're in love with it. You got to remember, like,
yeah,
video games are today, and you can see this with like male fans or female fans.
Yeah, yeah.
What the sci-fi, fantasy, and romance novel was in the 80s, and that market is friggin' humongous, but technology has taken over and we've embraced it, and the romance novel has evolved. The mm-hmm. fantasy choose-your-own-adventure books have evolved. And by the way, those choose-your-own-adventure books were friggin' awesome.
They were amazing.
I read every single one that came out, and there's still a place for them. But to not evolve is to die, man, and that's what that's what BioWare games are especially. They're choose-your-own-adventure for guys, and they're romance novels for girls. And those bleed into each other because guys like that stuff too. They just like it in a different format, right? Mm-hmm. We call it the internet.
And, yeah. But, no, absolutely. I totally get
it. But it's still satisfying a certain part of that brain in the exact same way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, while you were saying that, I was thinking of how huge of a fan I was of those Choose Your Own Adventure books as a kid. Like, I devoured them. And
I still have a couple of them. Like, they're tore up and old and beat down, but they're in my wife's library because she just loves that I love books when I was a kid. And she was like, oh, my God. And she has, like, fancy first edition nice stuff. And it's, like, you know, a 1982 Choose Your Own Adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny.
And, like, just it doesn't fit. Or the Great Brain Adventures in between Shakespeare and the Holy Bible.
My teacher is an alien. Stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Exactly.
Those are the best. So we absolutely have to talk about Iron Bull. Because this kind of came out of nowhere. I was a fan of your work as Vega, and then I started seeing, you know, BioWare announcing the voice cast for the upcoming game for Dragon Age Inquisition, and I saw you were in there too. So first of all, let's talk for a second about how they kind of approached you with this character, and then I kind of want to get your opinion of how you felt about the character when you first saw him.
Well, it started as just an audition, and the video game world and some animated shows keep all their auditions very secret, right? They put like a different title on the project and they give the characters different names. And I don't even think I was named the Iron Bull. I think he was just called like the Bull or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they changed some of the terms. So, you know, they don't want to say Ferelden, so they say something else, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I went in and you know, in an audition, there's no one from BioWare there. It's just your take. And I didn't really see I didn't get to see a picture of the bull or anything. It's just a description. He's a mercenary leader of the Blazing Bulls or something like that. And I think that's what it became. I don't remember what it was in the audition, like the Blue Blazers. Oh, that was a wrestler who passed away. Something with Blazers. So I went in there and I didn't really know. Like the description was he's like a linebacker who always gets his way, like the ultimate alpha male. And so the voice was just more like this, you know what I mean? I just played a jock a-hole.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't what I would have ever chosen had I seen that picture. But I booked the job anyway. And I think it's just because Caroline had worked with me before and we talked, because that was never an option as far as what voice I was going to actually do. I got in the booth and we started, you know, speaking about what the voice would be and who he would be and what he would sound like, and I sort of did a version of something that I thought would sound good, and she said it sounded a bit too much like Sean Connery. and so I turned it into this hybrid of this character on the Mickey Mouse Club named Thunder and Pete, and Winston Churchill, or the actor that played Winston Churchill in the World Wars. Which he may be doing a good Winston Churchill impression or not, I don't know. But it sort of was a combination of those voices, and Caroline kind of popped for it, and we cut some dialogue, and it seemed like it would be, you know, easy and simple, and then we got into the love story stuff, and all of a sudden, like, Caroline goes, she looks at the line and just goes, okay, so have fun with this. And, you know, the dialogue that he says is so just awesome and irreverent, and whatever's on his mind you're going to hear. And to apply a voice that seems much more commanding than it needs to be to dialogue, which some has been leaked, but I'm not confirming or denying anything, it just started cracking me up. And it was so hard to get. I mean, what's been leaked is nothing compared to what actually.
You're talking about the ESRB stuff I saw the other day about this?
I only heard a couple things about, like, you know, tits bouncing and stuff like that.
That's awesome. So actually, I have a quick question about that.
Yeah, hit me.
So they had to go in and basically they made Iron Bull romanceable, I think, like, late in the process, right? Am I correct in that? Because he was, like, too big to animate for the sex scenes or something like that. I think I read that
initially. Didn't do the love stuff until the very end.
Yeah. Did you actually have to go back and re-record stuff for that?
Not re-record, but I went back and we did the entire love story.
That's amazing. That's so cool.
I think it was – we did – additional three sessions. Those are 8-hour sessions. So,
oh, wow.
Just for the 24 love. Hours of bull love.
You know, people are going to mine those discs and just make, you know, hours of internet videos of all the bull love sounds.
And I never had I'm not on the internet too much, but someone was like, hey, man, you got to see this. They sent me a link of, like, James Vega's macho moments or something, and someone put, like, 70s disco music behind it. I was busting out laughing, man. I wish I could remember who it was. I'd give you credit, man, but you did a great job, whoever you were.
That's really awesome. So, you know, as a fan of the series, as a fan of Dragon Age, going in and recording all this stuff, are you ever kind of depressed that you know what's going to happen? I mean, you essentially at this point probably know what's going to happen in DAI. Does that kind
not
of
at all
you out?
No. No depression whatsoever. I love these games, so I don't care if I know or not. Like, I just don't, man. It's if it was a different game, yeah, I probably wouldn't play it. I'd be like, oh, yeah, okay, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I'll play the multiplayer. I won't do the single player. But with the BioWare games, like I said, man, that choose-your-own-adventure stuff, when you empower a player like that and you actually have accountability in a friggin' storyline. I mean, other games have done it too. Like, Deus Ex had, you know, a lot of accountability. You know, cops killing themselves because of you, you know. Like, all kinds of crap could happen in that game. And it wasn't a complete game, but that part of it I thought was special and powerful. And they even made their accountable moments even a bit more, I would say, important than some of the ones in the Mass Effect series sometimes. But that whole, you know, teaching in a game, like, that's just not – it's the opposite of what people buy, yet somehow they make games that make $100 billion.
Yeah, yeah.
Kids don't want accountability. They want an extra clip. And in BioWare, that's just not how it works, man. There's repercussions, and it's as close to real life as they'll allow us to get in a video game format right now. And I love it. You got to remember, like, Mass Effect 2 did the business it did without a multiplayer platform.
Yeah, that's
in a
true.
Day and age where if you didn't have multiplayer, you were dead. They wouldn't even let you pitch a game. They wouldn't even hear your pitch. Believe me, I know. So it's, you know, for them to pull off what they did with that game, that alone puts it in the top five for me. You know,
yeah.
Cultural change in whatever realm you choose to work in, then you get to be on Mount Rushmore, although that's only four.
That's awesome.
We debated that multiplayer section at great length when it was announced for Mass Effect 3, and we were, I mean, I guess I should say, I was very nervous about it, and then I played it, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. This is the future of this game, or, you know, part of the future of this game, so, you know.
I think it's definitely an effective element, and if they make a fourth one, wow, I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see what they do on an Xbox One. That would just blow my mind.
Incredible. Absolutely. For sure.
Do you think you're going to play the Dragon Age multiplayer stuff they're planning? Is it on
for
your
sure,
list?
Sure, man. And they better give me an advanced copy. They gave me Mass Effect 3 like 2 weeks after it came out. I was like, thanks, jerks. I bought it already. Like, you got my $60. Like, you know what I'm saying? I better get it early. I'll definitely play, man. Yeah. There's a couple people that I met on Twitter that are pretty chill, and you could tell hardcore gamers and don't care that I'm famous. They care that I like video games.
Yeah, yeah.
Or jokes, and I've already, like, told them, yo, when it comes out, I'm giving you my gamer tag, and we're going in and kicking butt, and I'm not, awesome. I don't rush, so don't worry. I'll go whatever pace you want to go, and we'll have fun.
Good times. Awesome. We actually got to play it, three of us played it at PAX a little while ago, and it's awesome. It's so much fun, so.
You know what I'm saying? Like, everyone in the world's going to play it before I do.
And you're in the game. That's
right.
Such a bummer. But we'll
a bunch of BS, man.
we'll see you on there. Have you thought about when you do play DAI, like who you're going to bring with you? Are you going to bring yourself?
I brought Vega, but I got tired of healing him, so he had to go.
Yeah,
and it was the Liara Garrus show all day long.
Oh yeah, that was my party too.
But he just was using up all my meta gels, man. but I had so much. James Vega and the Iron Bow are very, very different. One is a very loyal soldier, and the other is who he is, and is definitely his own man. Whether it's in regards to decisions you make, or how other Qunari feel about him, or how anyone really feels. So I'll bring him in the party just to be reminded of some of the things that I got to say in there. I mean,
that's awesome.
It wasn't all written for me. They let me do a lot of things, like just when you're sort of walking in your party, and there are things that I've always said out loud while I play games, and not a lot of voice actors play games, so. You know, it's not a spoiler or anything, but there's a moment in the game you'll be walking with Iron Bull and he'll let you know you should stop looking at specific parts of his anatomy. And that would be fun, like, while you're just sort of, you know, walking from one city to the next, from one random mob to the next, just to have that kind of casual stuff. And they like that and threw that in. And I know after that, some of the other actors got some cool opportunities to throw some fun stuff in there, too. So I think you'll get a feel. You'll definitely know I love games when you hear what I do, and you won't hear Bull overreact to killing a mob that took you, you know, 1 second to kill. It was a proper response.
That's awesome.
Programmer right. Put in, oh my God, that was amazing. Somewhere that they shouldn't have, but you know, my small responses were properly applied.
That's awesome. That's exciting. I know the Patrick Weeks, who was one of the writers of Iron Bull. He called the team. He's been playing the game and kind of tweeting about it. But he calls his team Team YOLO, and it's Bull and I think Sarah and I think Solas. And he's like, the dialogue between those three characters is just hilarious when they're together. So yeah. I think the different Solas dynamics.
Stuff,
are cool.
The Solas stuff is real funny between the two of us. And anytime Bull's talking to a chick, it's going to be good stuff.
Oh, that's awesome, man. We're absolutely dying to play the game, and I know our listeners are too. And we're super excited that you're in it, but let's talk for a minute about Rebels, because I think everybody is a Star Wars nerd to a degree. I'm mm-hmm. All of us on the show are huge Star Wars nerds, and we're big fans of Clone Wars and stuff, and we're excited that there's still Star Wars on TV. But I keep asking you how you got like involved in stuff, and it's kind of a generic question, but how did you end up getting involved with Rebels, and how fucking exciting is that?
Well, you said that word. So
yeah, I did. Sorry.
Part of the story, so I'll say it. You know, I went in to the audition not knowing what it was. It read like a bad episode of Thundar the Barbarian from the 80s, all the way down to the sun sword that the kid stole.
I remember
Thundar. basically the speech I give him in the pilot, right? Come with us, come with me, and learn the ways of the Force and the Jedi, right? But they phrased it differently, but it just seemed like this cheap version. I'm like, yeah, they're just ripping off freaking Star Wars, man. That's ridiculous. But it was Disney, and I was told, you know, you got to get in good with Disney, Freddie. They're a good company. They got lots of cool stuff coming. Like, okay, so I'm going to drive all the way to friggin' Burbank. It's an hour and a half drive. I'm going to get in good with Disney. So I pull up, and the dude next to me is a guy I met once before. He's a voice actor. He was on the Cleveland show. And I pull up, and I can't say everything that he was doing because some of it was inappropriate. But he rolled down his window, and he's like, hey, man, are you reading for the Wolf Pack? That was the name of the fake name that they put. I said, yeah. He goes, you know what it is, right? I said, no, what? I've never told the story, I don't think.
Oh, good.
Oh, what? He goes, it's fucking Star Wars. I said, and he's this big black dude, right? And I'm like, are you shitting me? And he's like, no, man. I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. I was like, all right. And I started walking in, and then you start like second guessing, right? Because actors aren't like voice actors. Actors will straight like sabotage you coming out of an audition. They'll literally do stuff like, oh man, that's the worst room in the world. Even though the people are like mad nice, right? Or they'll come out and be like, booked it, or some like douchey move like that. So I'm like, is this guy just like trying to horse with me? Like, is he screwing around? I don't know what's going on. So I start to like doubt him a little and like go into the Disney offices and start seeing artwork on the wall. And then it all starts coming together, right? I'm like, all right, that's a friggin' Twi'lek. And if it's not, then George Lucas is suing somebody. And I'm at Disney, and they had announced the deal that Disney had been purchased. So I'm starting to figure it out, and I'm sitting next to this Indian girl, the girl that didn't get the role. Tia got the role. And they called me in, and then I saw Dave with his cowboy hat on.
Oh, boy.
Ah.
Right then I knew. So I just, in microphone, they're behind glass, right? And so I can't hear them unless they press the mic. And Greg Weissman's in there next to him, and Carrie's in there, and a couple other people, the sound engineer. And I in the mic go, is this fucking Star Wars? And Dave just kind of does that all-knowing half Jedi, half Sith smile that he has. And I go, all right, just give me a second. And once I had confirmation, I kind of went away from the glass where they couldn't see me. I was like, all right, dude, don't think this is corny Thunder of the Barbarians. I knew what they wanted, right? They say cowboy Jedi, but it was Han Solo, right? Like, they want him to be cocky. They want him to be, you know, a wise ass. They want him to have the same smirk that I have. And that's kind of a Han Solo-y smirk because I was a smart ass when I was a kid. So that I knew what they wanted, and I went in and did it, and Dave gave me another take. He was like, yo, you can even be more of a smartass if you want. And so I did it again, and he goes, you seem to like that more. And I was like, well, you know, whatever. And then I knew I did a good job, but I didn't know if I got it. And a couple weeks went by, I found out I got it, and they sent us the first script, and it just blew my mind. We actually did a couple promos first, and they were just a lot of fun, yelling at Chopper and stuff. But once I got the pilot, it just blew.
Yeah, that's so cool. I was actually in the audience at Comic-Con this year when I saw like some of the clips for the first time and stuff. And you know, as a huge like Star Wars animated fan, and I was so happy with it. And I've been watching the show with my wife, and we love it. It's so awesome, and we're glad, you know, we're super glad that you're on it too, because you seemed like you're having a really good time. So
yeah, Monday's episode was a pretty sick episode.
I haven't caught it yet.
First of all, it's our best. It's our best lightsaber fight. Well, it's our first one, really. You've seen the lightsaber, but it's the best fight scene we've had, period. It's better than the Callus Zeb fight on Lothal. It's the Inquisitor and Kanan.
I can't wait to see the Inquisitor. I'm pretty excited about
powers. You see lightsabers. You see the Inquisitor just whip my ass and just pulls my style, my technique, because he studied it. Like, he just knows what's up.
And it
causes a lot of issues that were already existing between Ezra and Kanan, as far as Kanan not feeling like a true master and Ezra not believing in himself. And the whole episode is about, you know, do not try. You know what I mean?
Well, it does seem like Kanan's like almost reluctant to teach Ezra, you know, like he's
very much so.
Yeah.
You know, picture if you're 15 years old and your girlfriend says she's pregnant. You know what I mean? Like, that's what he's dealing with. And it's, you know, the end of that episode is awesome because Kanan literally, and it's not a spoiler now because it's already out, but
yeah.
Kanan literally says, I'm not going to try to teach you anymore. I'm just going to teach you. And they have this moment of him sort of, you know, throwing rocks at Ezra, who has my lightsaber because he hasn't gotten his yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a father and a son playing catch, man. You know what I mean? It's just, it's those classic characters and those classic stories that Star Wars has always been so fantastic at, that it gives you what you want without you being able to guess what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's insanely awesome. Were you like a big Star Wars kid growing up?
Man, the scar on my chin is from having a lightsaber war with my cousin. I used to jump off my roof and I never broke my ankle, and my mom used to flip out because, you know, it's 14, 15 feet in the air, and I'd always tell her, Mom, don't worry, I have the force.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I mean,
I jumped off like a 3-foot fence and sprained my ankle. So,
so that's what happens. But yeah, I mean, absolutely, we're huge fans of this series. We had Ashley Eckstein on the show a while ago, who we're sort of based out of Orlando, and so she was, you know, she's in Orlando as well for a lot of the year. We loved having her on. You obviously can't answer the Ahsoka question because I won't even really fully ask the question. But I'm just going to ask you, how badass would it be to have her come back on the show?
it would be awesome. But let me preface it, like, and I'm being completely straight up, like, I haven't even met her. Like, I know David Eckstein. You know what I'm saying? And I know who you're talking about, and it would be sick, but there's nothing for me to spoil for you there.
Oh, like, yeah.
You know, at least not now. They may have plans down the road, but they don't tell us too much outside of what our characters are doing. But her man, I know, could crowd the plate like nobody's business and probably got more beanballs than any other player in Major League history. Dude, that guy's like 5'8", and literally the batter's box didn't even exist. He literally, like, his toes were on the plate, and he didn't care how hard you threw. He was just going to get on first base and steal second. He was awesome. and I love him because he never talks on live radio, right? But maybe like twice a year. And every time he does, he blows up all these sabermetricians that think they haven't figured out. And he just, the arguments he constructs are so much better. I won't try to quote him, but you should YouTube his last Colin Coward interview, because he just annihilates all their arguments. It's beautiful.
That's awesome. I know he goes with her to like a lot of events and stuff that we've been to, and he seems like just such a nice guy. He's always just kind of hanging out in the background, letting her do her thing. And
I heard he was at the Star Wars weekends, and I didn't get to go, so I'm sure I'll meet her either at the one that they do coming up in Anaheim, or I'll be at the Star Wars weekends this year.
The celebration, year. The cool. Convention?
Star Wars Celebration, is that what they call it? Whatever
they
call it.
They so moved I'm, it out to Anaheim this year.
The great Ahsoka.
Yeah, it's awesome. Now, she's good people. You'll really like her. She's super, super, super sweet.
All I've ever heard is good things about her. And, like one and of Dave those tells us stories about how it was on Clone Wars, and tells us stories about her and plenty of the other cast. He always speaks really highly of her.
Oh, that's awesome. I do have a quick question about Kanan before we start wrapping stuff up. But, you know, Kanan is an interesting character just because he kind of exists in this, like, incredibly depressing time in Star Wars history. Like, there are very few Jedis left, and we haven't really seen, like, what it's like for Jedi after, you know, Order 66. So what, like, is it hard balancing, like, sort of, like you said, his cocky attitude with that the depression he must have, you know? Like, what is that like sort of playing, like, at this point, really the only Jedi?
First of all, I'll say this. Star Wars isn't going to give you anything fast. Mm. If that's what you're hoping for, it's the wrong franchise. It's, you know, it's not the Cosby Show. It's not going to solve all the world's problems in 30 minutes. Just, it's not. Like I said, it made you wait 3 movies to see Vader get it. So our backstories, first of all, are incredible. The very first day we sat, before we recorded, we spent a good 4 hours just talking about character backstory with all of it, with Tia, with Vanessa, with Steve, with Taylor, myself, what these people have been through and how they're going to lay this into the story. That said, you're dealing with a Jedi whose training was not complete. His master was taken from him at a young age, probably about the age Ezra is now, maybe just a little bit older, by 3 or 4 years. He's in his late 20s now, and a part of his growth has been stunted in multiple ways, emotionally, obviously, as a Jedi, obviously. Mm-hmm. I did an interview, and they said, oh, he's a Jedi Knight, and I questioned that. Because I don't even think he's a Jedi Knight yet. In this episode, on Monday's episode, you see just how powerful Kanan can actually be. And so I think that could lead people to believe he's a Jedi Knight, because he can force lift at an incredible, not rate, but his the level at which he's doing it is phenomenal.
Okay.
The Inquisitor to get away, it's another force lift. When he deals with the stormtroopers, it's a force pull into like this double WWE clothesline. But you see a lot of his potential, but his training's incomplete. So imagine your father and your mother are helping you, are shaping you to become whatever, you're the greatest pianist in your town, and they're teaching you to be even better than that, to be, you know, the next Beethoven, the next Bach, the greatest that there ever was, the Bobby Fischer of pianos, the Albert Einstein of pianos, and then they're both murdered. Oof. And now, 15 years later, 12 years later, you're great, but you're not what you could have been, and this homeless kid on the street you heard on an electric keyboard, and he's just as good as you are, and he's never been trained a day in his life. It's a lot for a 27-year-old to deal with.
That's awesome. That's
it. It's going to bring up a lot of his past. And in season one, you'll learn more about Kanan's past simply through Hera's reactions than you're going to learn through Kanan. So pay attention. Like, kids aren't going to pick up on it, but adults will. And you'll see much more of it through Hera's point of view. Because remember, these people had this couple had a relationship before they were thrust into the middle of this war. So Hera knows everything about Kanan, every secret, every good thing, every bad thing, everything.
I love that dynamic between them. You can kind of see it's very familial. You're like you know you can tell.
Hardcore fans see it, but not everyone does. And I want mainstream fans to recognize these things. I want them to see the level of subtlety that Disney and Lucas puts into these performances, because that's not Vanessa or I doing anything outside of acting. They still have to animate just how much her eyes will squint to let me know something. You know, they're the ones doing that.
Mm.
And fans need to recognize these things, because it's going to pay off so huge when these bombs do get dropped. So in season one, Kanan's not going to tell you much about his history, although you will learn a little. But I can say in season two, based off where we're at now and what I've read, and I won't tell you what episode we're recording or anything, but you get all of it.
Oh, that's so exciting. Super cool.
And when you do, it's hardcore and it's in your face. And I know people trip out when Disney bought this and they're like, oh, it'll be all Disney. Remember, this is the same company that killed people in every cartoon made for kids that they ever put out. Like,
so true.
They're murderers. Like, they kill all your favorite characters.
I'm still pissed about Bambi.
You know what I'm saying, man? Snow White's no picnic. You know what I mean? Like, it's about, you know, literally premeditated attempted murder. That's the whole show. That's the whole movie, Snow White. So true. They allow this show to be hardcore, and when you see Kanan let something go, that, you know, I'll equivalate it to my uncle James Barber, who was a soldier in the United States Army. In the United States Army, he was the best man I ever knew. Taught me everything that I am as far as what a man's supposed to be, and he was a Vietnam veteran. And before he passed away, to hear him speak about what he had to do over there after he got recruited by the CIA, you see a grown man break down. And to be 15 years old and see a guy that was indestructible to me, the guy who taught me how to deal with bullies, the guy who taught me how to deal with girls, the guy who taught me how to train my dog, you know, everything. The guy who taught me how to make a roast beef sandwich.
Wow.
Him break down and cry because of war is a very humbling experience, and Ezra's going to see that firsthand. And it's they don't pull punches, man. We've done it, and it's hardcore and it's deep. And that was what I thought about when we cut it with Dave, and that's what Dave and I discussed. And, you know, to me, it's the best scene I've done in the entire show so far. And man, I can't wait for it to come out. But it's, you know, these are all things in the Star Wars tradition of, you know, making the audience earn it.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I think is super cool about you that I've noticed in the past couple years is that you are such a fan of all of this stuff, and it shows in your work. Like, I mean, I had to ask the question, are you a Star Wars fan? But I knew well ahead of time, like, you could just tell, like, like, it's just like your bread and butter. So I think it's great. I mean, considering, like, you know, how in the public eye you were, you know, throughout your entire life. And now, you know, just to be kind of embracing all the same super cool stuff that, you know, that all of us love, I think is really awesome. So,
I didn't want to be an actor when I was a kid. I wanted to be the middleweight champion of the world. I was a pretty good amateur boxer, and I wasn't ever going to be as good as Roy Jones Jr. I had a lot of pressure put on me at a young age, and as a junior. Remember, you're simply a statue built to honor that which walked before you. You don't even have your own name. Most of the time, you're just called Junior. So there was a lot of pressure put on me to, grandfather said literally on his deathbed, to fix what your father fucked up.
That's quite a bit of pressure.
15-year-old to hear that, you know, it has, and an hour later, he was dead.
Oh, Jesus.
So for a 15-year-old to hear that, it's a lot of weight, man. And everything I did was for my dad and for my family. And when I did the sitcom and I put his production logo and his classic line of looking good. When I put that at the end of it, it was sort of my way of saying, look, this is a decade of my life that I've spent on you, and I'm going to go as long as it lets me go. And it unfortunately only went a year, but it was also fortunate because my priorities quickly changed after that. I didn't feel like I had anything left to prove, and I was literally able to just do stuff that I really like to do. I didn't enjoy being famous. You know, everybody likes getting to skip lines, you know what I mean? So I like some of the benefits of it and stuff like that, but it made me uncomfortable when people tried to buy me drinks. I offended some people and I didn't let them, you know. It freaked me out when people would, you know, freak out, because I felt like I was a pretty normal guy. I never felt like I was any different than I was in high school. And in high school, I was a nerd, man. Like, nobody hung out with me. I had like two friends in 12 years, man. You know what I mean? So it was very uncomfortable for me. And I never enjoyed it too much. I got along with some of my peers, but a lot of actors I just can't freaking relate to, man. They're all beta personalities and they're all, you know, so susceptible to criticism and compliments that you can control their emotions like they're a friggin' puppet. You just go, oh my God, you're such a great actor. And they're like, oh my God, I am. I'm so good. And then in the same breath, you could be like, but you sucked in this movie. And they're like, I did suck in that. Oh my God. And just your opinion changes apparently their entire performance. And I just can't hang with that. You know, I can talk about Sean Penn for like 3 or 4 minutes, but after that, I'm out of material, man. And a lot of actors can go through a pack of Marlboros and talk Sean Penn, and I just can't do that, man. So, you know, I didn't have a lot in common with those people. I always had more in common with the crew. I'm still friends with some of the crew from 24. We still hang and talk eat sushi together.
That's awesome.
And you know what I mean? Those are stunt guys were more my guys because they're into martial arts, and I bring them to the Gracie Academy and choke them out. You know what I mean? And,
yeah.
But
like, it's cool that you seem to have like really found like something that you love. Like, you seem genuinely happy. Like, you know, I'm following your Twitter and you're like cooking meals, hanging with your kids, doing voices for the games you love. Like, and that's, I mean, to me, that's what it's all about. Like, you got to find that Zen spot in life, you know?
That's what it's all about, right? Like, you can reminisce on the past, but you can't dwell on the past, and you can prepare for the future, but you can't fear the future. To do either of those is to really step out of that Zen bubble, and balance is what's necessary. Like Bruce Lee said it best, unnatural naturalness or natural unnaturalness. But he's saying yin and yang. It's all about balance. He's saying there's a place for science and there's a place for religion. But if you go too far in one direction, it would be very unscientific. You go too far in the other direction and you become a mechanical man. And these sound like hokey fortune cookie things, but he's talking about balance. And it's such a key element that we've lost in the American lifestyle, that people hear me talk and they go, man, you're so happy. And I'm like, man, it's so simple. Like, it's not, we overcomplicate life just by the way we look at ourselves in the mirror for the first 30 seconds. So I just don't look in the friggin' mirror. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I shave in the shower, man. I don't need a mirror.
Yeah, and it's a good point. And it's not like you found that Zen place quickly. It's like, you know, you got to take a lot of baby steps to get there.
Yeah, that took me 35 years to get there, man. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great way. Well, we have a signature question we ask everybody that comes on, and it's our nerd-appropriate signature question. And what we ask is, do you have any sort of nerdy hobbies or passions or collections or anything that you want to share with the audience that maybe you haven't really talked about before, like anything you collect or anything that you are super – I mean, you talked about so many things you're passionate about already, but are there any that you haven't mentioned that are sort of like your secret hobbies or passions?
I mean, the comic book thing isn't a secret. People know I've had passion for that over the years. You know, I – this is the bad thing with Twitter is like people – people hear this and then they'll be like, oh, this guy's a kook. look, I mean, I'm a sky watcher. I have been since I was a little boy. I have a telescope. I watch the stars a lot. I watch the moon a lot. You know, I follow Hubble. I follow NASA. I follow the Canarias telescope. You know, those are things I have great passion for.
That's awesome.
Super cool. No, that's really, really cool.
I look for other stuff too. You know what I mean? Like, when I was a kid, I'm not saying I saw flying saucers, but I saw shooting stars that would stop and go back the other direction. I've never seen a star do that before. So, you know, I look at the skies a lot, and you know, it's a big universe. There was a video game. I don't remember which one it was, but they said if we were the only things out here, it'd be an awful big waste of space.
Oh, that is a great quote. What is it? I know exactly what that's from. I can't remember, but that is... That
might have been one of the Halos from back in the day. I can't remember, but...
Yeah.
It's telling the truth. You know what I mean? You listen to scientists today, there's a lot more than one potential, you know, Earth-like planet out there. I think they said it's actually in the millions now, based on the amount of new sun stars that they found out in the universe.
Wow. It's unbelievable.
It would be cool, you know what I mean? I wish they'd land and you know, help me get an internet signal that was stronger than what I got.
I think your quote is from the movie Contact.
Is it? Oh, it is from – it might be from Contact, yeah.
There's a similar quote from Contact, but I remember playing a video game and seeing two kids sitting in a field, and there's, like, animated grass blowing by them both ways. And one kid's asking, like, his older brother or his older sister the question, and then the other one answers. It's a video game, too. Or they stole it from Contact.
Well, a listener will definitely find you on Twitter and tell you what this game is, because I know somebody out there knows.
Oh, my. And they made a YouTube video about it.
Right.
A billion hits, and I just don't know about it.
Probably. Well, thanks so much, man. This has been super awesome. We absolutely loved having you on, and the door is always open if you ever want to come out and hang out with us, talk about games. We might have to have you back on, like, post-DAI just to kind of talk about all the Iron Bowl greatness. So
we should do an interview with the Iron Bowl instead of me.
Oh, yeah.
I'll have to start drinking again and get drunk enough to pull that off. I'll give you guys the abbreviated Winston Churchill. I won't give you the entire speech because I don't remember it, but I'll give you the highlights. Okay. And this will be in the voice of the Iron Bowl. We'll see if I can pull this off.
All right.
And remember, Winston Churchill inspired this voice. Yeah. We shall not flag or fail. We shall go on to the end. We shall fight in Ferelden. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender. Inquisitor.
Oh, yeah.
We have a no clapping policy, but I'm clapping anyway.
Yeah, you can clap for that. That's okay.
Freddy, sir, that was unbelievable.
I used to remember when I was a kid, I loved speech. I loved, like, famous politician speeches, and I had memorized Winston Churchill's speech. He had another one. It was Blood and Something. And I had part of that memorized. I had Jesse Jackson's speech when he was running for president memorized, which I know people make fun of Jesse Jackson, and he deserves it at times in his life. But this speech happens to be maybe the second greatest speech in American history. JFK, obviously, this weird Ronald Reagan speech about ETs, oddly enough, and a couple others. I'll have to, like, try to refresh them in my head, and I'll one day do them all in the Iron Bowl.
That's so amazing. Awesome.
Yes. Jesse Jackson as the Iron Bowl would be the ultimate. I'd have to basically rap, and I don't know if
it's
I could do
rap.
That. The proclamation and emancipation. Like, I don't even think I can pull it off.
Oh, that's so good, man. Well, thank you so much. Where can folks find you on Twitter and on the internet if you want to be found?
I'm only on Twitter. I'm at RealFPJR, at RealFPJr. And if you like video games and MMA and weird 80s, 90s pop culture, then you'll probably like what I tweet. And if you don't, then you probably shouldn't follow me because you won't understand a word I write.
Fair enough.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for hanging out with us, man. And we'll definitely be in touch, and we'll have to hang out again and do some more Iron Bowl action in the future. That was ridiculously cool.
We'll do Iron Bowl versus Kanan in like an arm wrestling match.
That would be so much fun.
And talk the best shit.
Later, man.
All right, you guys. Thanks for having me, man. It was a real pleasure.
Thanks.
Thank you.
right, thank you guys so much for tuning in to our chat with Freddie Prinze Jr. He is an awesome guy. Make sure to pick up Dragon Age Inquisition in just a couple weeks now, and you can check him out as the Iron Bull in that. And definitely check out Star Wars Rebels, which is airing, you know, all right the time now. Yeah, and it's awesome, and I really love it. So, you know, I'm glad he's doing that fun stuff. If you guys want to follow us, you can follow us on Twitter, and that's at NerdAppropriate. You can email us directly if you have any questions or if you want to, you know, just send us random fun stuff. And that is Matt, Scott, and Ash at NerdAppropriate.com, and we will reply to you there. And we have a Facebook account, and that is /NerdAppropriate on Facebook. And definitely check that out, too. Sometimes we put pictures from cons and stuff up there that we don't put anyplace else. So Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We have an
Instagram that's super inactive sometimes. We do. And then really active when we're at cons. So that's true. That's just Nerd Appropriate on Instagram. We're all over the social networks, guys.
Yeah,
that's
where we are.
You just have to know which one to catch us on at the right time.
At the right time. Like,
if we're at a con, it's all about Instagram. Otherwise, it's all about Twitter. And then sometimes it's all about Facebook.
Yeah, I think post-con I just forget all the passwords.
Facebook. Yeah, post-con is Facebook for sure.
Yeah. That's where all that stuff goes. But anyways, thank you guys for listening. We really hope you enjoyed Freddie Prinze Jr.
And go let him know that you enjoyed this podcast as well. Yeah.
Yes. Tweet at him. He's a good dude, and his Twitter's pretty fun. So go hit him up.
With any luck, you'll see him on the show again someday.
We hope
so. Can all dream.
Mm-hmm. Later, guys.
Bye, guys.
See ya.
Well, that was awesome.